Books of Elsewhere, Chapter 8, page 60. "Why don't you bring this to the table, Olive?" said Mrs. Dunwoody over the last dinner preparations as she passed Olive a light candle for the centerpiece. "I've always thought Olive could light up a room," choked Mr. Dunwoody, making Olive's face turn the color of her pink of her kitten cereal. Mrs. Dunwoody bustled to the table, kissed Olive and Mr. Dunwoody on the tops of their heads, and settled down in her chair. They all spread their napkins across their laps. Olive dropped hers on the floor. "When did Olive start wearing glasses?" asked Mr. Dunwoody over a forkful of meatloaf. "Olive doesn't wear glasses, do you, Olive?" Mrs. Dunwoody squinted at Olive doubtfully, and then looked even more doubtfully at the spectacles hanging from the chain around Olive's neck. "I just found these upstairs," said Olive, "in an old chest of drawers." "Ah," said Mr. Dunwoody. "Was that the experiment you asked me about? You wanted to try wearing them?" "Yes," said Olive. "That was it, exactly." "Well, just don't keep them on for too long," said Mr. Dunwoody. "You could end up having to wear something like these," and he tapped one lens of his own thick glasses with the edge of his butter knife. The lenses made a loud clunk. "Would you like any lima beans, dear?" asked Mrs. Dunwoody, holding up the serving dish to her husband. "Yes, 46 of them, please." Mrs. Dunwoody scooped a large spoonful onto Mr. Dunwoody's plate. 46 lima beans. How many for you, Olive?" "I don't know. A small helping?" 24 for you, then." Mrs. Dunwoody put down the beans and sat back in her chair. "You kept yourself busy all afternoon, Olive. I didn't see you anywhere." Olive swallowed a mouthful of beans whole. I was just exploring upstairs." "Oh, that sounds like fun," said her mother. "Did you discover anything interesting?" Olive shrugged. "A few things." The next morning, Mr. and Mrs. Dunwoody went to the campus for a meeting. Olive stood in the quiet of the upstairs hallway, staring first at the painting of the dark forest and then at the painting of Linden Street. From the outside in daylight, the painting seemed much less menacing. They were stuck to the wall, after all. They couldn't tiptoe into her bedroom while she was sleeping or tap her on the shoulder when she was all alone in the dark. Then again, Horatio said that they were dangerous, and the shadow streaming after her and Morton hadn't been in her imagination. She was certain of that. Part of Olive kept hoping Horatio would appear around a doorway or aside through an open window, but she had so much more to ask him. Another part of her wondered if she should climb back into the painting of Linden Street and talk to Morton, maybe if she asked him the right questions. But as soon as she put her hand on the frame, she remembered his angry face and his shrug and his "I don't care." Olive had heard those words and seen that face before. Year after year, some well-meaning teacher would nudge Olive to join a group of other kids already in the middle of the game. "Can Olive play with you?" the teacher would wheedle, while Olive shuffled and looked down at her toes. The kids would put down their blocks or their dice or their dolls and look up, and they would shrug. "I don't care," one of them would mumble. Olive's hand slid off the picture frame. She shuffled down the stairs. Horatio had said someone was watching her. Someone dangerous, someone who wanted the house. And if that someone was the same bad man Morton was talking about, what was he going to do? What could he do? The only place where anything remotely dangerous had happened to Olive, except for that corner above the bathtub, was inside the painting of the forest. As long as she kept the spectacles safe, and as long as she didn't spend too much time in any one painting, she would be all right. Wasn't that what Horatio had said? Olive ran her fingers down a long chain and settled the antique spectacles on her nose. A little thrill of excitement tickled her stomach. If she was careful, everything would be fine. So with the house all to herself, Olive charged freely from room to room, wearing the antique spectacles and occasionally bumping into blurry things that might or might not have been furniture. And in the living room, she examined the painting of the man and the woman enjoying lunch at a French Street cafe. Through the spectacles, Olive watched the whole scene come to life. Passersby jostled each other. Fat Parisian pigeons hopped. The woman who seemed to be raising her glass in the toast had in fact been frozen in the moment, just before she poured her drink into the man's lap. Olive watched the woman flounce away while the man dabbed at his suit with his napkin. In the upstairs guest room, there was a small watercolor painting of a woman wrapped in a bath towel, dipping her big toe delicately into a bathtub. And when she noticed Olive watching her, the woman gave an indignant squeal and plunked down into the water, leaving just her head in view. And in the blue bedroom, Olive leaned close to the painting of the fancy ballroom. so close that she could see swirls and streaks of paint in the dancer's clothes. She wasn't going to climb in, she told herself. She was just going to watch. The painted musicians came to life, changing and plucking in and out of practice fashion at their horns and violins. The dancing couples broke their regal poses and went back to tripping on their hems and stepping on each other's feet. Olive giggled out loud. The dancers glared at her, and one tuba player stuck out his tongue. Olive went back downstairs to the library, where the computer stared at her with its big blank eye. Her parents' work was stacked in carefully planned piles on all the surfaces and pinned to some of the vertical ones. There was a painting between the two bookshelves that was one of Olive's favorite in the whole house. It showed a group of girls in a flowery meadow holding hands in a wavy circle. They wore wreaths of wild flowers on their hair and long, soft Grecian dresses. These girls looked cheerful and friendly. They didn't look like they would frown or shrug their shoulders if Olive tried to talk to them. Besides, they were young, and their Grecian dresses didn't look that different from Morton's nightshirt. Maybe they knew something about him. Putting on her bravest smile, Olive grasped the painting's gilded frame, then leaned forward slowly until her nose touched the painting, and with that same feeling pressing her face through warm jello, Olive fell through the frame and landed in the soft, sweet-smelling meadow. The laughing girls stopped laughing. They let go of each other's hands and stood still, glaring at Olive, and some of them nervously demolished a daisy. Another glanced over her shoulder at the sky. "What are you doing here?" demanded the girl in the center of the broken circle. Olive shuffled her feet. She dug her fingernails into her palm. I thought you might know a little boy named Morton." "Keep your voice down. He'll hear you," hissed a girl with long blonde hair. "You shouldn't be here," said the center girl. "You're going to get us in trouble. Go away." Olive felt several gold paint smooth hands pushing her back toward the frame. She toppled clumsily out of the painting, bumping her head on the bookshelf as she landed. The spectacles slipped off her nose and thumped against her chest on the long chain. Olive looked back up at the painting, and the dancing girls had gone back to their formation, although now their smiles looked strained and insincere. Olive rubbed her sore head. Morton had been scared of something watching him, too, but at least he hadn't pushed her out of the painting. Olive's footsteps echoed in the dusty library. She trailed along the hall to the kitchen. Just beside the kitchen door hung a small painting of three men building a wall out of stones. The men wore old-fashioned caps and jackets. They looked a bit dirty, but sociable, like they wouldn't mind having company. Then again, she'd been very wrong about the dancing girls. Olive hesitated, and for a moment the things she wanted to know wrestled with the things she hated to do. But finally she put on the spectacles. She stood on her toes, put one arm into the painting, and clamping it over the bottom edge of the frame. And then, with great effort, she pulled herself sideways and into the patchy ground of the building site. The three men stopped working and they stared at her. Their mouths fell open, and one of them dropped the rock he was holding, and it jumped aside before it rolled onto his toes. Olive swallowed the giant lump in her throat. "Hello," she whispered. "Well, hello," said one of the men. "It's a young lady," said another man, the way most people would say, "it's a flying saucer." "Bless my boots," said the third man. Olive had never heard anybody say "bless my boots" aloud before, but it made her smile, and suddenly she felt much less afraid of these three men. "How on earth did you get in here?" asked the first man, removing his cap and scratching his head. Olive opened her mouth to explain, but the man went on. "Nothing ever changes here," he said doubtfully. "Sometimes I think I've been laying the same stone over and over," said the second man. "Seems this wall will never get finished." The first man nodded in agreement. Olive hadn't seen him put his cap back on, but there it was. It was perched on his head. The third man was still staring at Olive. "Well, I'll be a monkey's uncle," he whispered. Olive thought it best to ignore their questions. "What are you building?" she asked instead. The three men looked at one another. There was a long pause. "A wall," the second man said at last. "Yes, a wall," the third man nodded relieved. "But a wall of what?" asked Olive. The three men looked at one another. "You know I can't rightly say," said the first man. "Weren't we building a house?" asked the third man, frowning so hard that his eyebrows formed one fuzzy caterpillar across his forehead. A house? That's it, a house, said the second man. There was something funny about the house, though, said the third man slowly. He looked up at the hazy white sky. What was it? Special stones, muttered the second man to himself. Crazy demands, the giant cat always in the way. I'd never work for that old geezer again. For who? Who do you mean? Asked Olive, her thoughts reeling, but the second man was slowly hoisting the fallen rock back into place. Shh, the first man hissed at the others, glancing over both of his shoulders. Don't you say the name aloud. Something funny, said the third man, still staring straight into the air. Something funny about the basement. The basement? Said Olive. Something plummeted in her stomach, like an elevator whose cable had snapped. Not the basement. Anywhere but the basement. Olive cleared her throat. You did say the basement, right? She asked, trying to push the tremor out of her voice. The three men stared at her mildly confused. One of them nodded. All right, boys, back to work, Olive heard the first man say as she turned back toward the frame. Come on. Come and see us again, young lady, shouted the third man with a wave as Olive clambered out of the painting and back into the empty kitchen. Her heart was pounding. A stone house, a cat, the basement.